All right, welcome back, Flashback fans, to another Famicom Flashbacks podcast. It's Brandon with my co-host, M-Trip.
That's me.
And today we're bringing on a friend of ours. I didn't know how to refer to him, but it's really mean.
The term is used loosely.
A gamer known as Shane.
Or I drink scotch.
Or he drinks scotch. He's coming to us live and partially sober, so first off, we want to thank you for that, Shane.
Hey, no problem, man.
So, we actually found him outside the door when we got home and dragged him in. And
can I be a part of this, please?
Took his head and shoved it into a bathtub full of cold water, and he seems to be okay.
Yeah, I'm hanging strong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you threw up a couple times.
Well, you know, you gotta release the demons every once in a while.
Release the demons. All right.
Hate you.
If our fans remember our last podcast, we went through the lineup for our title bout, Star Wars, The Force, versus Legend of Zelda, The Triforce. And we had some pretty cool lineups.
Yeah,
pretty cool lineup there.
Yeah.
A lot of cool fights. I think I'm pretty proud of how we put together some of the fights that went on. And as Matt said, some of these characters, it was a good pairing.
I mean, yeah.
They definitely paired up pretty well. But today we're going to talk about the results because we recently had our results pop up on the WordPress. And you know what? I'm gonna be honest. There was a couple surprises on there.
There were.
I lost money. I'm not gonna lie, I lost money on a couple,
really?
Couple of bets I had for these, and surprisingly enough, they were the ones I wrote.
Yeah,
and I still lost those bets, which is crazy. But if our fans, if you haven't had a chance to see it, you may want to even pull it up on the internet as we're going through the podcast and as we're kind of talking about this. It's on our WordPress, the Famicom Flashback WordPress, really easy to search. And check it out as we go through here, because there were 12 fights in all, and we're going to kind of go through some of them. And I don't know if you guys had a favorite. Matt, did you have a specific favorite outcome? Or was there one fight that turned out differently, or surprisingly, or encouragingly positive?
Well, my favorite fight, of course, is the Darth Maul-Ghirahim fight, only because
yeah.
Darth Maul is...
Not so much for Ghirahim, more for Darth Maul.
Yeah.
Not so much for Ghirahim.
Oh,
for
right, Darth Maul. Right. And it was just, I just thought it was, you know, it's always exciting when the person you want to win actually wins. The one that didn't turn out how I thought it was going to turn out was the Han Solo fight.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah.
That was a surprise. You know, I was really looking for, you know, a couple of Han shoot first type scenes, and
he got lucky because who knows how it would have turned out. But
if you haven't had a chance to read it yet, essentially what happens in the fight is, you know, Han's on the planet Hoth working on the Millennium Falcon, because the Millennium Falcon seems to have a lot of vehicular difficulties on the planet.
It's a ship around, but it's never running.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's because Chewie was off fighting. You know, was off on a fight. He didn't have him to help repairs. He had to do it himself. Han doesn't know how to repair anything.
I tend to think it's more that cold weather type of thing, you know, like when you go out and you start your car.
Yeah.
I always assumed in episode 5 in The Empire Strikes Back, when they're having trouble getting the vehicle started, it probably just is more attributed to cold weather. You know, because I know that living down here in Florida, we get like 2 days of cold weather a year.
Yeah.
And our cars kind of whine a little bit.
They do.
They act like they've never seen cold weather before.
Look, it's 60 degrees out.
Oh,
what
my gosh. Don't try to start.
Residents do the same thing.
So. Yeah, that's true. I don't want to walk the dog. But yeah, no, surprisingly enough, if you haven't had a chance to read it, Han, he's working on the Millennium Falcon. Impa shows up. The battle ensues. Impa gets a kind of a good lead to begin with.
She strikes first in that one.
Yeah, she definitely strikes first, takes kind of a tactical retreat, and gets caught up with a Wampa.
Yeah.
And, you know.
That's it.
It was good eating.
Yeah. Han Solo, being the intelligent person he is, kind of just splits the scene.
That's what I would have done too.
Yeah, no, it speaks to his character. I'll say that much.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, but I would say my disappointing, the one that I wanted to win but didn't, would be Princess Leia.
Oh yeah,
that's I think she's a
that's based core off the character. Hotness.
I agree. Yeah, definitely.
I was disappointed in that fight because she never shows up as Princess Leia's slave girl in the actual battle.
In my mind, she did, and I think that's why I was even more disappointed, because I imagine that after Zelda 1, she kind of undressed her, put her in the outfit, and was kind of staring at her and stuff like that.
Well, just, you know, I mean, it does say buns exposed.
So you have to visualize what she's doing and say, that's naughty. That's naughty.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that takes me to a whole different place, and I won't share my thoughts with the rest of the fans.
I always kind of imagined that once the episode 6 was over and they started up the New Republic and all that stuff, I always kind of imagined that she showed up to Senate sessions dressed as Princess Leia's slave girl.
It would get your point across. I mean, you wouldn't have to say, can I have your attention? Because they'd all just be staring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, the fact of the matter is, I would imagine the galaxy far, far away being as large as it is, sexism is no longer an issue, so women can pretty much just dress however they want.
That's right. I wish I was a woman.
Yeah. I also wish Matt was a woman. Shane?
Yes. Definitely. I come over here and he has no clothes on generally.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
A big thing between me and Matt is, you know, take that shirt off.
That shirt off.
It's true.
He's said that multiple times in this podcast.
That's true. I'm surprised I still have it on. It's only because it's a new shirt. That's why I'm kind of getting it molded to my Adonis-like physique.
Now, Shane, do you have much experience with Legend of Zelda?
I don't have a great deal of experience with Legend of Zelda. I've played a few of the games, but, you know, as far as extensive experience with the characters, no, I don't.
Would you say you have more experience with the Star Wars character?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you say in these battles that you were siding with the Star Wars characters over the Zelda characters more oftentimes than not?
Most likely. I don't know, like the Chewie and Darunia battle,
yeah.
I gotta hand that one to the Triforce, because,
man.
2-ton rock flame guy. So
rock flame guy is the official Wikipedia description of any Goron. I would agree with that. You were just, I know when you first went through and read some of the battles, you were just kind of happy that C-3PO got just annihilated right off at the beginning of his.
He's just an extremely annoying voiced individual.
Right.
R2-D2, I can't say that I'm happy that he bit the dust, but, you know.
Hey, he put a good fight up against the Sword Spirits.
He did, indeed. And, you know, that's a good way to go out, so. I mean, I'm not.
He may have made it farther than most Star Wars characters would have made in that particular battle.
True.
He usually does.
He usually does. He has, as we said in the last podcast, a ridiculous amount of luck for a little droid.
Yeah.
So. But actually, that was, just referencing that particular fight, that was my favorite of the fights. It was kind of cool because it was really a tag team. Mm. You had R2-D2 and you had C-3PO together, obviously, against Fee and Scrapper from Skyward Sword. And if you don't know, Fee is very much like C-3PO in the sense that she gets kind of annoying. And, you know... I like that the fight started out with that kind of, like, these two debating it, because that would be the most annoying debate in the history of...
Well, yeah, I saw that she's just sitting there pointing out obvious things.
Yeah, which is essentially her role. If you haven't played the game yet, her role in Skyward Sword is to point out, like, Master, you're under attack. You should use your sword. Really?
Thank you for that.
What installment of the Legend of Zelda series is this? Has Link ever not used a sword? I would use the sword, except you are my sword. She is a sword spirit, so in the game, she is your sword.
Okay.
Yeah. So, when she's talking to you, you can't exactly use your sword.
Use your sword. Shut up and let me do it, please.
The one that was surprising for me, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Rauru. I was really, not that I was surprised, I knew Obi-Wan Kenobi would win that fight. I knew that one. I felt pretty confident on that. But, you know, I feel like there was a personal loss for him in that battle.
Yeah.
He let himself go. And in this particular battle, if you haven't had a chance to read this yet, essentially Obi-Wan, you know, he not converts to the dark side, but lets himself go for a second, takes on Raru in owl form, and smashes him to the ground.
He saw an opportunity to defend him and the council, and he took it.
Win for
Trump. I think it was not so much for him, but it was they were insulting the Jedi Council, and he's standing up for the Jedi as a whole. But that will not be tolerated.
Yeah, it was surprised. It was a little bit of a surprise, though. I was pleased because I wanted him to win that fight, you know. But the fact that Obi-Wan let himself go for a second, I kind of liked it actually. There was a deep down inside of me, there was something that a switch that flicked on, and I kind of liked it. And considering you both are two of the most violent people I know, I assume that you were quite comfortable with that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, smashing things into a paste is a
smashing big things thing. Into a paste is usually a good thing.
Yeah, so high on my list.
You know, I would say probably the most response we've gotten in any of these battles was, in fact, the Jar Jar Binks versus Tingle fight. And
Which doesn't surprise me.
It's kind of fun to say, actually. Surprise outcome? They both die?
Win for the fans.
Yeah, I don't think people would have expected that, you know, they were, you know, who would actually win in that battle, but in all honesty,
I don't think people were ready to predict that battle. I think most people were like, I don't know who'll win, that's just crazy, but I do need to comment on it. But I was pretty pleased to see that the Death Star just pretty much annihilated Alderaan, which is the planet they were fighting on. And
no, they probably saw title about 12, Jar Jar Binks versus Tingle, whatever. Winner, the fans. What's that all about? And then they probably went back and read it. Yeah, they just want to see who won. And they go, right. What do you mean the fans? All right, what the hell happened?
I really think the keen-eyed Star Wars fan will get where it is going as soon as they see that the location of the battle was Alderaan.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no. We definitely thought that went through and thought, where would be the best place for the two most hated characters of either franchise to start their battle? How about a planet that's going to be destroyed?
How wooed!
So, very, very pleased, surprised, but pleased by that battle. That was one where I was surprised by the outcome, and I was quite happy with the outcome. I would have to say, though, the one that was maybe most surprising would be Yoda versus Midna. People are big fans of Yoda, aside from the two people in this room.
I am a Yoda fan.
Oh, you are a Yoda fan. Okay, so aside from Matt, I would say most people are pretty big fans of Yoda.
Yeah. I was.
I thought the fight was really. I thought the fight was really well done. I thought how he went out, it made sense, and it was just a really cool way to take him out.
Yeah. Essentially, Midna uses her abilities to kind of teleport his lightsaber right back into him.
Yeah, yeah.
And Yoda puts up a good fight, but in the end, that I would say if I had to pick one surprise bout, it would be the Yoda versus Midna.
Yeah.
It was just surprising to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the fight was well done. I definitely agree with that. I just, you know, it's Yoda.
It's Yoda. I mean,
I can't go against
he was
Yoda.
A fan favorite. I mean, Midna, yeah. I don't even think is necessary. She's only appeared in one Legend of Zelda game, which is Twilight Princess. Yeah. And I would not say she's even really a fan favorite character. I think a lot of people really like her.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say she's the most favorite. Some people do find her kind of annoying. But the fact that she was able to take out Yoda, kudos to her. Kudos to her.
Yeah.
I mean, that is nothing to shake her fist at. It was pretty impressive.
Dying me is by my own saber.
You know, it, to be fair, that's a pretty that was a better death than to die of old age inside of a tree.
I agree. If you're gonna go out and you're a Jedi, go out fighting. You know, right. It's like, you know, and then just disappear,
whispering to Luke Skywalker. Yeah.
Where does he go when they disappear? Is it like Lord of the Rings where they go to that forbidden Isle of sandwiches or whatever, and they go on that boat? I mean,
okay.
Forbidden the Isle Grey of Haven. Sandwiches.
Yeah,
the Grey Haven, a.k.a. the Forbidden Isle of Sandwiches. Oh, gosh.
Outstanding.
That's great. That's why the elves are so quick to leave Middle-earth when they get the chance.
Exactly.
Like sandwiches. Yes, elves love sandwiches.
Can you get that lambus bread, put some meat in the middle?
See?
Sure. Salty pork.
Salty pork.
Salty pork.
Salty pork and lambus bread. Scrapple. Take my shirt off right now.
I don't remember anywhere in Lord of the Rings where Scrapple shows up in cans.
Oh yeah, it's
there. Did you read that interesting thing that Jupiter posted about the three locks of hair that Brimley got? Yeah. That was really from the Silmarillion.
I think this is a time here's the thing. In our blog, we definitely refer to Star Wars as the greatest movie franchise of all time. I don't think I've said this before, but to Star Wars fans, I apologize, but I definitely put my lot in with Lord of the Rings. That's just what I do. I'm ready for the fan craze. Yeah. In 2015, we can start really getting back into Star Wars, but for right now...
We got The Hobbit coming out, so it's just... You know,
I am so excited about that. Yeah. It looks like they're going to do a really good job with that. You know, to be honest, they've done a really good job with all of the movies so far.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the length of the books. You know,
I just hope when the movies come out on DVDs, they come out in extended cuts, because I really want to spend a full 48 hours watching movies.
Yeah,
I really do.
I agree. It's just happening.
Anyways, back to Star Wars vs. Legend of Zelda. just scrolling through here, we did have a fight, the Ewoks versus the Kiquis.
Which is awesome, by the way,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, the Ewoks not only destroyed the Kiquis, but also ate them.
Every time I read the description of the Kiquis, it always reminds me of the Mandragoras from Final Fantasy.
Yes.
Just those little onion bulbs and the things sticking out.
Oh, really?
Which Final Fantasy
is that from?
They're in a lot of them. There's an enemy that you fight and stuff like that.
Okay.
They're just like a little onion, and it had a little sprout on top of their head.
Picture,
yeah, know. And it's every time I read it, I'm just like, I just imagine that from Final Fantasy.
You know what video game characters they remind me of?
What?
Bulbasaurs.
Bulbasaur.
Pokemon. At least I knew it was Pokemon.
You did know it was Pokemon.
I don't know anything about Pokemon. Bulbasaur. Do you know anything about Pokemon?
I know a little bit. I like Pokemon a little bit.
At some point, we're going to have a title bout, Pokemon versus something.
Digimon. Or Pokemon versus Power Rangers.
I almost would go more for Pokemon versus Power Rangers, because I think it's cool that... The thing I did like about this... So I'm saying this now, thinking towards next year when we do this again. I like the fact that it was a gaming franchise versus another geek franchise.
Right.
And we could easily do... I think as a video game community, we do this quite often, video game characters versus video game characters.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a lot of fun to see a video game franchise against another popular franchise. This case, Star Wars.
Could easily do like a Nintendo versus Sega.
The
options are endless. But
yeah. I've always kind of liked the idea of Sonic versus Mega Man. I always thought that would be a cool fight.
That would be a cool fight.
The way that their villains... kind of pair off, you know, when you look at Robotnik and you look at Wily, and the way some of their side characters pair off. I always thought that'd be kind of cool. Proto Man versus Knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would just be a really cool fight.
Yeah.
You know, if we were to do kind of a...
That would be cool, you know.
You know. I just thought that one would be kind of cool. Thoughts on Vader versus Ganondorf? I think I want to bet on that one. I was shooting for Vader. I know a lot of our media friends were thinking Ganondorf might.
It was surprising to me.
Yeah. Ganondorf.
Anakin, you know, being the chosen one. If he hadn't been hurt,
right.
You know, and everything, he would have been so much more powerful than he was in Vader form. So if it was him in like full potential, I'd been like, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
But he's not up to full strength, and Ganondorf is just nasty.
Well, and
he can shapeshift, and he has all this kind of stuff. But you know, I mean,
for anyone who's a fan of Ganondorf from the Super Smash Bros. Series, I think a lot of people who responded. If they were fans of Ganondorf in the series, I could see where people would see that be a hard fight for Vader to win, because Ganondorf in Smash Bros. Is just ridiculous. He's a powerhouse.
Yeah,
he is.
He just
a kick.
Yeah, the kick. Yeah. He kind of like stomps his foot down too, and he can just not. I mean, he just
has that charge punch. If he hits you with it, man, you're gone.
And if he gets the final smash, and he just turns into Ganon,
Plus, Ganondorf is just pure evil. I mean, he is just.
Yeah.
He is evil incarnate, you know, it's what he is.
Yeah.
He's a slaughterhouse, man.
I guess in a way that was kind of a surprise, but the Force won that one. And then really, obviously the main one. I like the main one. Now, Jupiter took the Link versus Luke fight, and I like that he decided to place the fight in Termina, which, if you don't know anything about Termina, it's the location of... the location from Majora's Mask, which is a place, it is a very depressing place to live because there's a giant moon coming down to destroy the planet.
Oh, nice.
And the moon has a scary face.
Oh, okay.
Which is also horrible.
It's just like, oh, okay.
And essentially everybody on the planet knows they're about to die.
Outstanding. They can't get off.
No. So,
nice so life.
I thought that was an interesting choice on his part, have the two of them fighting. I think I know why. Jupiter's a huge Majora's Mask fan. He's one of those.
One of the few, I would say. That game has like a cult following, but
it does.
Definitely not received as the best.
No, not by any means. And I think the obvious reason why is because of the fact you play as Kid Link throughout the whole thing.
But that's the game that like you just keep redoing the days, right?
Right. It's the Groundhog's Day of the of the Legend of Zelda series.
Oh, God, I wouldn't like that at all.
I would like if there was a Groundhog's Day of the Star Wars series.
No, that would be cool.
I would like if there was a Groundhog's Day video game.
Right?
Based off the Bill Murray movie.
Don't drive angry.
Leia? Wow. Wow. I just remembered why I hate that movie.
That movie's awesome.
It is, to be fair, it's one of the top 10, AFI's top 10 fantasy movies of all time. Which, when I read that, it blew me away. The fact that Groundhog Day could be placed on the same list with, It's a Wonderful Life.
And The Jerk. Yeah, and The Jerk and Grandma's Boy and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, those are comedies. I don't think The Jerk is a fantasy film.
Well, I think it is, because
The Jerk was a great
movie. It is a great movie.
In real life, I won't go there.
So the end verdict was The Force, 5 points. And The Triforce, 6 points. Major win for retro gaming. And I wouldn't say we were impartial. We were partial, on this. I think we were really impartial.
Yeah.
Because while obviously we put our lot in with retro gaming, we all are huge fans of the Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say Star Wars Trilogy.
There's more now.
I think most people will refer to it known as the Star Wars Trilogy. I mean, I could get rid of the first three.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for the soundtrack to
Phantom Menace.
Phantom Menace. I can't get rid of that.
No.
I'm almost to the point where I would say that might be my favorite soundtrack out of all of them. It feels really bad to say that.
It has its moments. It's not my favorite of the three. Return will always be my favorite, in terms of everything and the soundtrack. But, there are certain tracks in that movie that just rip you apart. I mean, in Phantom Menace, it's just so well done.
I kind of feel like... go ahead, Shane.
I'm a big fan of Liam Neeson being in Phantom Menace. I'm a huge Liam Neeson fan, so... I couldn't do away with the first three just because of that.
Well, him and Darth Maul made that movie.
Absolutely.
Yes. Liam Neeson is just such a strong actor. And then the only thing that brought that movie down was that, of course, they had to have Samuel L. Jackson in it.
Yeah.
There's no reason to have him. I want to be in that movie.
And then he's been in everything else.
To be fair, if you ever get to the point in your career where you can just say, hey, I want to be in that movie, and then get some parts.
I understand it.
Would be awesome.
Is Mace, before that, was Mace Windu an actual character? Or did they make for him?
Qui-Gon wasn't an actual character before that. I mean, none of these characters were actual characters.
Oh, I thought he was. I thought in the series and the books and stuff that Obi-Wan was actually trained
by. Not
that
I know of. For the new trilogy, most of that stuff was in fact written by, Lucas for the new trilogy. One of the things that I am looking forward to. This is where I think the the next trilogy, is what I'll call them, the next trilogy could be more successful, or at least more fan-pleasing, is the fact that early on we're hearing reports that they are looking into the books and some of those things. You know, the stuff that has been written after Star Wars movie. Right. And I think that is going to be fan-pleasing. I think there's going to be a lot of people who appreciate that. If you're a Star Wars fan, enough of a Star Wars fan that you get into the books and stuff like that, if these screenwriters go back and they research these things and they actually include some of the stuff, I could see where that'd be real fan-pleasing.
Yeah.
One of the surprising things, a favorite author of mine wrote the book for The Phantom Menace, Terry Brooks.
And okay.
I was really surprised by that because he hasn't really, I mean, he's got his, you know, the word and, you know, power thing going right. on, but, you know, for the most part, he talks about, you know, a post-apocalyptic world that's, you know, come back around to, you know, being way back with magic and all that stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, that from some of the stuff I've read, just about, you know, from the books and stuff that didn't have to take place after Return of the Jedi, it looks as though, you know, they're going to rebuild the Republic. Luke is supposed to... Now, mind you, we don't know when this is going to take place. This could take place well after Luke and Leia. But Luke is supposed to, in the books, rebuild the Jedi Council and that type of thing. So, I mean, if that stuff happens, I could see that would be really fan-pleasing.
Oh, yeah.
Be almost as the equivalent of, taking stuff from Tolkien's books and making three Hobbit movies, really.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost. Let me emphasize that.
I want to emphasize that I'm a Lord of the Rings fan first, and then a Star Wars fan second.
Not a Star Trek fan first.
Not anymore. I get yelled at when I bring up Star Trek.
My mom,
especially when you're going to a certain convention.
If I go to a Star Wars convention, I'm wearing Star Trek paraphernalia. I really get a lot of crap.
I can't remember that guy's name, but the guy, he plays Professor X and he plays Captain
Patrick
Picard.
Stewart.
Yeah, he played Picard in the Star Trek
series. Yeah, so he played the King in Oblivion. Mm-hmm. The Scrolls of Oblivion? The King
of
the Beginning?
Oh, right, yeah, he did.
That's right.
I don't call him Patrick Stewart, I just call him Professor X.
I call him Picard. Every time I see him, I'm like, Captain Picard. You know, because that was the first one that I saw him as.
That was one of those cases of what we call, like, perfect... That was, like, perfect casting when they decided, hey, let's get Patrick Stewart to be Professor X.
Yeah.
I mean, people have been saying if there was ever an X-Men movie, Patrick Stewart should be Professor X. And the fact that got casted was pretty amazing.
He's coming back for the next...
I saw it.
For the next X-Men movie. That's pretty sexy.
I get upset when they cast people for, you know, political reasons or who's buddies with who. Or
right,
whatever,
right.
You know, instead of, like, who would play, you know, a part better.
It happens a lot, though.
It does. It happens
quite often. People do have their kind of crew of actors they like to work with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's things like 300, Leonidas, you know, Gerard Butler did an excellent job, you know.
This is Sparta!
Liam Neeson and Taken. Like, that was perfect.
I think I stood up clapping that whole movie.
300?
I was just like the whole time, even like, before the movie even started, I was just like, I didn't know this is going to be amazing.
I feel bad that 300, like, a lot of people have, you know, that's, what's his name?
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder. A lot of people have become very disillusioned with his style, but I mean 300 in a lot of ways is still very, I think, groundbreaking. People will disagree with me. I think, you know, to be fair, like even with a lot of Frank Miller stuff, I felt like that movie did a better job than even Sin City, because Sin City is also another Frank Miller comic book,
right?
And so 300, I thought the 300 did even better job of portraying the world that Frank Miller created than even Sin City did.
Mm-hmm.
And Sin City was good, but 300 was... I just think, you know, and maybe I'm just giving it too much hype, but I really think it's flawless movie.
Everything looks so dreary, you know, just the way everything, just the art style. It's not like, there's never a moment where it's like, oh, everything's just happy, you know, it's just like, you know, it's just by looking at it, it makes you just like, wow, it's not just... You know, yeah, they're doing this horrible thing, but just the way the world looks, you're feeling it so much more. Yeah. Everything is just so depressing. And
even his childhood memories, you know, with his dad and stuff like that, you know, it was overcast sky and stuff like that. There was never, like, sunshine and rainbows.
So. It would be fun for the new Star Wars franchise if they did something like that, if they did set kind of a mood to the film, you know, did a little bit more of, like, the play with the colors a little bit. And
yeah.
I would love to see... in the process of rebuilding a really dark, dark world, you know, like, you know, I'd love to go back to Coruscant and see, you know, after, you know, the Empire took over, what a dark place it's developed into. Okay. I'd like to see that. And I'd like to see them portray it as a very dark, dark world.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that, you know, Star Wars in general still has to be somewhat lighthearted because of the fact that it kind of is an all-ages franchise, but I would love to see just an opportunity to take it a little bit darker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you think about the time that the original, you know, trilogy came out, you know, all the movies back then, if it was going to be violent, it was violent. Like, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's not like now where, you know, unless it's rated X or something, you know, you're going to get some nasty stuff on there, but... you know, back then, you know, you think of Rambo and, you know, all those actors, you know, Jean-Claude, all them, it was violent, you know, you're ripping people's throats out and, you know, it's showing all that stuff. So, I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from with an all-ages thing.
I think with Star Wars, though, I think it even, because, I mean, and I'm not knocking him for being that kind of all-ages thing, I think that's what it needs to be.
Right.
But it doesn't, you know, you have a specific range which the Star Wars films can fit in. It's a much smaller range, you know, than some movies. You know, even if you look at, like, the Avengers franchise, each movie can be very different than one another. The Thor movie is very different than the Captain America movie. The Captain America movie is very different than the Iron Man movie. If you were to take it into the video game realm, you know, the cool part about Legend of Zelda, and is one of the reasons I'm happy that they won in this bet, in this whole title bout, is that the cool thing about Legend of Zelda is the range of the Zelda franchise is huge. Yeah. It's probably got larger range than most video games, because each game, no two games are alike in the Zelda franchise.
Yeah.
No two games are alike. I mean, they're just so many. Even if you went just on an NES console, you know, you look at the original Legend of Zelda versus the Adventure of Link, they're completely different games.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to like Adventures of Link, but you have to admit, I mean, they were trying something totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Super Nintendo, you know, with
Link to the Past.
Link to the Past. I mean, it's just such a phenomenal game, but it didn't stop there. Once they got it to the 64, they took it into the three-dimensional realm, and a very successful game, you know?
A lot of people's favorite.
Yeah, and even the storylines are all different in each one. I think that's kind of the nice thing about not having a central Link, having it be multiple Links throughout the series. In Legend of Zelda, there's not just one character named Link. There have been Links throughout the series. I think that's the benefit of having that, because you can just play it off. You know, you got Toon Link from
Wind Waker,
Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass and... you know, Spirit Tracks.
Isn't Toon Link also in, like, Oracle of Seasons and stuff?
Well, yeah,
is that Toon Link as well, or is that more, is that adult?
I think with Wind Waker, the official sequels to Wind Waker are definitely Phantom Hourglass, because it's the same Link, but also Spirit Tracks. Now, Spirit Tracks is actually a different Link. I'm not sure if you knew that.
No, I did not.
It's not Wind Waker Link. This is... Spirit Tracks actually takes place well after Wind Waker. And you know that because the world's not covered in water anymore now. All of a sudden, you're able to ride on a train. And actually, this Link in Spirit Tracks, he doesn't start off in a green outfit and all this stuff. He's just a kid who works on trains.
So now, is the different Links like a reincarnation type deal, or...?
Well, I mean, I won't go into it too much, because a lot of this is revealed during the course of the latest game, Skyward Sword.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, there is a curse. There was a curse placed where this great evil will follow the... I guess you could call it a reincarnation of Link. Will follow Link throughout these different forms, and follow Zelda throughout these different forms, you know, throughout the generations.
Okay.
And, you know, just to clear it up for fans and maybe Shane, I don't know, because Shane only has a certain amount of familiarity to the franchise. The games aren't chronological either. It's not like the Nintendo one is not, when you look at the chronology of all the games, it's not the first in, you know, Skyward Sword is the first in that series. And then it even splits off into different timelines, which we talked about on one of our podcasts before. And we'll probably discuss again once we pick up the Hyrule Historia.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit confusing, but once you just accept the fact that these are all different characters, even the Link from the NES game the NES game to the other NES game, from Legend of Zelda to The Adventures of Link, is a different Link. There's been a couple Links that have repeated. You know, you look at the Link from Ocarina of Time, you know, when he goes back to his original time as a child. It's the same Link as Majora's Mask, so you see that character repeated. As I said, Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass, same Link. But otherwise, I mean, they really, I almost think it does, like I said, give them a bigger range. They have more care. They have more ways they can go with it. You look at Skyward Sword, it almost looks like it's painted throughout the entire game. Twilight Princess, much darker look to the game.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I think that was the one I played.
Yeah.
It was for the Wii, right?
Yeah, and it's probably the darkest. It's on Wii and GameCube. But it's probably the darkest, I would say. I haven't played that one yet.
It looks cool. I mean, I have it.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's on my list.
I don't know, I couldn't get into the motion controls for, you know, you know how I am. I'm very, very old school. Like,
yeah.
You know, when I play Zelda, I want to hold a controller. I don't want to be doing motion. So I just, I can appreciate, you know, the way they went with it. But it's just I'm too old school with these games, man. I need to have the controller in my
hand. That's fair. A lot of fans have requested the option to do both.
Yeah.
To be quite honest with you, and I really wonder for the future of the Zelda franchise where they're going to go now that they have the. For the Wii U, now that they have the gamepad, the little gamepad there, I wonder, because, I mean, are you going to do motion control with the gamepad, or are you going to use a Wiimote, or I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I really hope they give you the option to do either.
They could do some really cool things with that gamepad. They need to not rush it. They could do with that gamepad with Zelda would just be unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think it's been upsetting me with the newer, you know, games that are coming out and systems and things like that. They rush through them so fast because they're trying to race with other companies and stuff. You know, they put it out before it's really ready.
Yeah.
So it comes out really glitchy and, you know, it's not up to par.
Sometimes they come out before I get a chance to play the first game in the franchise.
That's true.
I'm still waiting for that one to go cheap and then already have the sequel to it. I'm like, geez, Louise.
Yeah.
Didn't even have a chance to pick up the first one.
That's what I'm saying.
But that's kind of the dealie. But Zelda's been nice. Zelda, you can definitely tell that they take their time with those games. They don't come out very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to give Nintendo some props for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
No, and each Zelda game has been strong. You know? Yeah. Like, you know, like what always happens is, you know, when Wind Waker came out, people hated Wind Waker. And then when the next game in the series came out, they're like, hey, Wind Waker is actually really good, and they hated Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
You know, and then every time it goes out, and I think it's the same thing with Skyward Sword. People were disappointed with Skyward Sword. And when the next one comes out, they're going to realize that Skyward Sword was an amazing game.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Little bit I saw of you playing it, it just looked like a fantastic game.
Yeah, and that tends to be more of a console thing. I mean, the handhelds can be kind of hit and miss for people.
Yeah.
But console games, generally, I can't think of a console game. I know even the Adventure of Link, people give a lot of crap. But for the time frame it came out in, for what it was, it's an amazing game. It really is.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be honest. We give it a lot of crap, but it really is an amazing game.
Yeah. No, definitely. I'm looking forward to playing through it again.
Yeah.
Once I finish the first one. So
yeah.
I only played it once when I was growing up, and I just remember being so frustrated. But I think if I give it another chance now, since we started this project, I think I'll have a better appreciation for it.
This is what it comes down to, is just a hard game to play right after you play the original Legend of Zelda.
Brutal.
To go into Adventures of Link, the original Legend of Zelda, in a lot of ways, for that Nintendo console, even though it was an early game, for that console, it was almost a perfect game.
Yeah.
It's hard.
I don't know how we did it without the internet.
I don't know
before
how
the guides came out. I mean, just the most random.
Yeah.
You know, like, and like in the one dungeon that we're in, you talk to the old guy, and it's like, you'll find secrets where fairies don't live. But it's like, the world's so huge. I know that's right. How you get to Dungeon 7. You have to blow the war whistle, and it transforms the lake, and stairs open up. But, like, back then, when you're a kid, like, right. you don't put two and two together, you know? Like, when you're 7 years old, you're just like, what?
Or, like, when we're trying to pick up the Master Sword, and you needed a certain amount of hearts. So you had to go up and just blow up random walls.
Yeah.
How would you... I mean, the map's not small, by any means. Yeah. How would you know to just drop... And it's not like if you just put a bomb near it. You pretty much have to put it on the spot or next to it.
And it's not like they're all always on the edge, so you can try it. I mean, some of them are two spaces over. So it's like, you know, you're just constantly... It's like, this looks like a spot where a scare haze might be.
And bombs aren't infinite.
Yeah.
I mean, if bombs are infinite, I would just go along and just bomb everything.
Yeah. No, they're expensive. They're
well, you got to look at it in the sense that you were in completely different, you know, mindset when you were playing games like that back then. You know, like, I get on Mortal Kombat, the original, now, and I can't beat anybody. I can't even beat the game, you know.
Yeah.
It's much more difficult. It's a completely different control set. You know, the tactics are totally different. You know, now they're trying to make everything realistic or as unrealistic as possible, so...
Definitely.
You know, and it's a totally different world.
Plus, gaming culture has just changed. And I think when we do this with this project, some of the stuff we do want to point out is that, you know, the cool part about retro games was it wasn't like a quick fix like it is now with video games. Video games now are very much a quick fix. You know, it started with, obviously, sporting games. You know, it was like every year you had to buy the new Madden.
Yeah.
And it was that fix that people had to have. But even, like, with games, you know, like, a lot of the first-person shooters.
Call of Duties and Battlefields,
I mean, it's a constant thing. I mean, you got to jump on the next one just because that's what everyone's going to be playing. And if you're playing online, you have to have the new one in order to really get the full advantage of it. So it's like, there's constant games coming out. Back in the day, and I've said this numerous times, back in the day, I only might have gotten a game once, twice a year if it was a good year.
Yeah.
You know, maybe on my birthday I would get a video game.
Yeah.
You know? So it wasn't a quick fix. And I like the fact, I really appreciate it. Props to Nintendo. Props for other video game companies at the time for realizing, like, we have to create games that are going to give people a lot of gameplay because they cannot spend the money to constantly buy these games. Make a good game, make something that someone can play for a really long time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, now, obviously, the culture's a little bit different. They need to make money. So they got to keep the cash flow going.
And people want games that aren't super long. They want to be able to beat it real quick and move on to the next thing and not really experience what this game has to offer.
Beat it quick, as quickly as possible. Pick up as many achievements or trophies.
I mean, even nowadays, like the new games, like Skyward Sword, I mean, like, it was more linear, would you say? I mean, it's not...
Yeah.
Like, you compare games today to, like, the original Metro Legend where you had no help. You had to just explore and figure it out, you know? People don't want to do that anymore. They didn't. No, where do I got to go next? I don't have the time or patience to deal with this stuff anymore.
Right.
And it's just, I feel games are just losing out on that whole, I just found this secret, like, by myself. Like, now I know where to go, that whole
and feeling. And we're guilty of it. We're all guilty of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man, I'm doing the walkthrough for Zelda now because, I mean, now I'm 30, I can't.
Right.
I can't comprehend how the hell I figured this out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
No, I'm dumber as I get older.
You just sat there. You just sat there and tried stuff until something worked.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think if there is a fault for Skyward Sword, if there's something that people get mad at it about, it's because I think in a lot of ways Skyward Sword was, okay, we're going to make a Zelda game that speaks to... And to be fair, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to speak to your audience. You're supposed to speak to your culture. And it was, instead of having it just, here's an open world, explore, they said, okay, we're going to tell you exactly what you need to do step by step, and you are going to be led through the entire way.
Yeah.
And that's the way just games are now. It's just a different culture. And I respect that, and in a way, it almost makes retro games a little bit more special, because you can go back, and it's something you can't experience now.
That's the way Final Fantasy went with 13.
Yeah.
Extremely linear. There's not much. Mm-hmm. You could beat the game, and then go back and do like some side stuff, but... Not like 6, 7, or 8, where you
a lot of complaints about that.
Just wander the map.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it. I thought it was cool that they did something different, and especially now that I have limited time, I like being able to get through the game.
Yeah.
But I mean, in Final Fantasy, I just think it's the best game for exploration.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that they're changing it with this series, you know,
I hope they don't continue that trend.
Yeah. I'm still shocked that at the age that I got Final Fantasy VII, I got it at like 11 or 12 or something like that, and I beat the game without a strategy guide or anything like that. Yeah. You know, and I got all kinds of, you know, special stuff, and I just look at it, and I'm like, how the hell did I figure this out?
Yeah. Especially 7, because 7...
Yeah, you know, 7 was...
7 is, if you... There's a lot of stuff, if you miss it, you're not getting it.
Yeah.
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 Especially summons and stuff like that.
That's the thing where some of those Final Fantasy games are brutal. Because it's like, hey, you missed it, you're not getting it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, like there was 8's brutal on that one. Mm-hmm. If you don't draw this from this particular battle, you're never getting this summon.
I mean, you're looking for... I mean, yeah, if you're trying to collect the Timber Maniacs, you're trying to get the monthly weapon, you know, mm-hmm. weapon magazines... Right. I mean, you have to explore, you know? Yeah. And there are so many shops in that game and places to go and eat. And every town, right. just scene after scene, you know, of it. But that's what I loved about it, because it's not like every building you went into was like, okay, this is useless. There was always something in there to look at or somebody to talk to. Yeah. And it was just a little conversation. It was like, awesome.
Well, wasn't like Carbuncle the first one you could draw?
No, the first...
He was early on. I don't know if he was the first one.
No, Carbuncle wasn't in 8, I don't believe.
Oh, it wasn't?
You got Quetzalcoatl first.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Was the little green guy.
Who's the little green guy?
Or maybe that wasn't his name.
No, maybe... I think you are right. Isn't it Carbuncle's the little green guy?
Carbuncle's the one that has Ruby Light, that has the... But
I think he's in 8.
Is he in 8?
He puts Reflect on
I feel like that's what I missed. I missed him early on, and I felt like because of the fact he was a defensive... summon instead of a offensive summon. Just
kicked him out.
That I
like screwed up.
Well, because there's not nearly as many defensive summons.
The first one you draw, I believe, is Siren when you're invading Dalet. Because it's Quetzalcoatl, then you get Ifrit, and then I believe you get Siren.
I'll be fact checked.
You pull Siren out of the big vulture bird thing up on that dish.
When you're that's correct. Yeah, when you're fighting that demon.
And then Carbuncle is from one of your first... I think it might be your first encounter with the Sorceress.
You know what? I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I believe you're right. When you can draw it from Sorceress D or whatever.
No, it's her her little lizard things or whatever.
I believe you're right. When you're in town, when Irvin was supposed to snipe her and he doesn't.
Yep.
Yeah, and no, she, I think you're right.
She animates those gargoyles or whatever.
I know, we just completely went from Zelda Star Wars right into Final Fantasy. But it's okay, because Final Fantasy is key.
It says Carbuncle is the guardian force obtained by drawing from Igweons in Delum City.
Yep. That's
it says, if missed, right. it can still be drawn from Krista in Ultimisia Castle.
Really? Oh, nice. Wait, but that's like at the end of the game.
That's at the end of the game. That was the... 8 is very underrated. A lot of people hate 8, and it is slowly becoming in my top of Final Fantasy games.
8 I need to go back and play. You know, I always say I want to go back and play a 7. The one that deserves to get replayed by me most is probably 8.
Because the customization you can do... The only thing that 8 has against it in the movie scenes, is if you know what you're doing, you can break the game right in the beginning. I mean, you can beat that whole game... By never passing a level, beating it at level 1, and just by junctioning all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm sure every game has, you know, most games have a way where you can break it and beat it real easily. But, I mean, the Guardian Force in that game, the fact that there's like 20 of them,
and they're
all unique, and you equip the different people, you get different abilities, and just how you junction their stats. I love the customization that you can do in that game.
If you could pick one Final Fantasy franchise to take on Legend of Zelda, what would it be?
Wow.
Jesus.
I would probably say 10.
You think so?
If I had to choose.
Yeah, I think those worlds would pair up nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Titus and Link.
Yeah.
Although if you were going for like Wind Waker Link, you know what would be cool would be 9.
Yeah.
If you could have 9 take on, if you're talking like the younger Link and some of those characters,
that would
be...
They both have a very unique art style for the game as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you had to pick a Final Fantasy franchise to take on the Star Wars franchise.
7.
Either 6 or 7.
Seven would work. I could see seven for the original trilogy.
I could see Kefka taking on Vader.
I could see seven taking on the original trilogy because it did have a little bit more of a, you know, a lot of the ships and stuff felt a little bit more clunky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But for the original trilogy, where things were a little bit more sleek, maybe 10?
Yeah.
Maybe 8. 8 hit a lot of space travel in it.
Yes.
It did.
Ragnarok. And
a lot of desert areas in that game, so.
And the Bayland Garden. Can you imagine?
What was the sleeping sorceress out in space?
What was her name?
Yeah, I don't know what her name is. Because there's a couple different sources.
Was it Abel?
Was it Abel or Adele or something?
Maybe Adele. Adele or Abel or something like that,
yeah. Imagine if she was guarding the Death Star?
Oh, God.
That'd be Pym.
Done. And she...
I'll make this t-shirt!
She was an Amazon. She was built like a man. Like a very large man.
Yeah. Which is what you kind of liked about her, to be quite honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, she looked exactly like Matt, so... You know.
Shane likes large women. Shane is not by any means a really tall man. I mean, you're average height.
You're like, what, 4 foot two?
Yeah, something like that.
You're average height for a hobbit, right?
Yeah. Right about. I mean, I'm a very short guy. I'm 5'6".
He likes really large women. Like, if you are like a... We'll say his phone number at the end of this, but if you're a 6 to 7 foot tall woman, Amazon type woman... Shane might be interested in
prerequisite, though, you got to have at least a 3.0 KD ratio in Black Ops 2.
Yeah, if you're not at least that good at it, I won't even mess with it. And then it's not any fun, because, you know, I like to play against my spouse, you know, and if they can't give me a challenge, then just get out.
You know, I give you credit. Yeah, if you can get...
Got to have standards.
If you can get a woman that you can play video games against, you know, you're officially my hero.
Emmy loves Black Ops. Loves it. And zombies.
And that's why Shane is still the man, and that's why Shane joined us today on our podcast.
That's right.
There you go.
So, big thanks to Shane for showing up, even though he has a loved one that will play video games with him at home. Now, if you get the kid playing video games as well, that would just be amazing.
Well, I'm sure that won't be a problem. I mean, what kid doesn't play video games?
I just picture a toddler playing some Black Ops. It'll be amazing.
Oh, my first son used to love watching me play World of Warcraft. So, you know, he would just sit there in my lap.
No, I want to see baby sniping.
Oh, it's happening.
That's a t-shirt. A little baby landing with the guitar with a little Bluetooth.
Like, okay, fair enough.
It's got to have an angry face on, though.
We can do that.
That'll be a Maymay or whatever you make. Just like, can you just raise your... Are you serious? I'm across the map? With an MP7?
No.
Shoots me across the mag behind a boulder. Behind a boulder.
I have no idea what they're saying. I don't play first person shooters, but they're laughing, so I'm laughing.
You do, you just don't play current first person shooters.
What was your thing with the like, you're like, what did you call it? You always had the same thing to say whenever they would shoot you from across the map with the in Battlefield. Oh, God.
It wasn't the P90. It wasn't the UMP. It was the...
It was the P90. Yeah. You're like, P90! P90!
From that range!
Yes! From that range! So angry.
We definitely have some fans out there are really appreciating this right now. The first-person shooter fans are like, finally!
Yeah.
Finally!
If you want to see Rage Quit, oh, man.
That could be a video segment, Rage Quit.
Rage Quit?
Well, we could invite Shane in. Shane and Matt present Rage Quit.
I've definitely done some Rage Quitting.
Yeah. I've thrown my controller multiple times.
Oh, man. Backing out of games, AFKing out of battlegrounds in World of Warcraft. She's like, really? Backed out.
Actually, that could be a podcast, just talking about our memories of Rage Quitting.
Done.
Okay, write it down. Shane will be invited for that one. It's written. So again, thank you, Shane, for showing up, talking about Star Wars, which you love, talking about Legend of Zelda, which you're mildly familiar with.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
And
that's no problem, man.
Of course, M-Trip's going to take us through and remind us what ways we can communicate, because you know what? I guarantee we're going to have some fans who are really angry about the way some of these battles turned out and are going to want to respond. So how can they go ahead and send us hate mail?
send us an email at FamicomFlashbacks@yahoo.com. Check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at FamicomFlash. Subscribe and comment on our awesome YouTube channel. You can also follow us on blog site at FamicomFlashbacks.wordpress.com. And especially comment underneath these articles. Let us know which ones you hated, which one you approved of, and if we missed any.
Matt would love hate mail.
I love hate mail. It drives me.
My reason for being.
It's my reason for being is hate
just
mail.
Just tear me apart.
Do it, because honestly, it'll give us something to respond to, and that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I don't like compliments. I just want to know how terrible
I am. I like that people are really passionate about this stuff. And I know there are some passionate Star Wars fans that need to tell us what they think about the fact that Star Wars lost The Legend of Zelda. Yeah. I'm actually taunting you right now.
I better hear something about the Yoda loss.
The Yoda loss needs to be commented on, so yeah. Everybody who's listening to this podcast has an obligation.
Depending on the response we get, maybe we'll do a follow-up fan mail podcast and read some of the responses that I'll be able to hear.
That'd be awesome. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Let us know what you think, and let's keep retro gaming alive.
Peace!